When I hear the whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, whistleblowing.
I was going to ask you later on if you could whistle, how good you are at whistling.
Oh, yeah. I can do it.
I wish I was better. I mean, I can
Yeah. But I could do that.
You know how you can, some people can like flick their fingers in their mouth and like whistle super, super loud?
Yeah, I can't.
I can't do that either.
I can't.
But I'm so jealous of the people who can. Anyway,
well,
back to.
Yeah. Hello, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah,
hello,
hi, everybody.
Ben.
Yeah, we've already talked about whistling, so just whistle along and listen to our episode today.
Okay, so Ben, how do you define a whistleblower?
A low down, dirty, squealing, cheese eating rat is what I call you.
What in the world is that from?
I just kind of made it. I mean, I just kind of like put together movie quotes and just thought about like.
But what does that have to do with a whistleblower?
Like you're a rat. You're squealing on.
Like, oh, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Like I'm
wow.
thinking particularly yeah. about like police whistleblowers. I'll talk a little bit about that later. But like,
okay. Yes.
You know, somebody who tells on you, who squeals on you, you call them a rat.
Yeah. For some reason, I just did not make that connection.
Didn't make
Even
that
though
connection.
Part of using the word whistleblower is so you don't use like informant or snitch, which mm-hmm. are, you know, kind of negative terms. But
yes. Snitches get stitches.
Yeah, they do. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to define that for us, whistleblower.
Okay. Yeah. So really though, not to use derogatory terms, a whistleblower is somebody who like reports evidence of wrongdoing. They're usually employers or people who have inside knowledge about things like abuse, corruption, fraud, or other bad behaviors that threaten the public health, safety, etc., from the inside. So they're
yes.
like insiders who know something bad's going on and
right.
then they
yes.
squeal.
Blow the whistle.
Mm-hmm.
So the first, this is a fun history fact.
Oh,
the
cool.
first documented whistleblowing case in the U.S. took place in 1777,
Ooh.
Which was a year after what?
The Declaration of Independence.
Yes.
I almost said like the year Columbus sailed the ocean blue, but that's like 1492 or something.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a group of naval officers witnessed their commanding officer torturing British prisoners of war.
Mm.
So they reported the misconduct to Congress and their commanding officer charged them with libel and both men were jailed. The following year, Congress passed a law protecting whistleblowers and the men were acquitted by a jury. So that is the first documented case in the U.S.
Nice.
Of a whistleblowing incident. Mm. Do you want to do a little word origin for our listeners?
Certainly. So whistle is actually an Old English or Germanic word. It's
okay.
basically very similar, but they're related to the ideas of whispering and hissing. Yeah. So like
okay.
whisper, hiss,
yeah.
whistle. You can hear kind of like the sound. Similarities.
Yes.
And this was when I was going to ask if you were like a good whistler.
Gotcha.
Can you whistle? But anyway.
Yeah.
And I also think about like whistle, like before we didn't do it today. And
yeah.
I was going to wait and see if we did. But usually before we record, we always like take a
wet
drink of
whistle.
Water and be like, oh, just wetting the whistle.
Yeah.
So in that sense, we are whistleblowers.
We are.
Too. But whistleblowing as a phrase itself dates back to the 19th century when people, including the police, for example, would use a whistle to alert the public. So raise the hue and cry, something was going on, a fire or crime or sports officials who use,
yes.
like referees, use a whistle to blow to indicate a rule violation. The word appeared in an 1883 newspaper to describe a policeman alerting citizens to a riot. So it's kind
right.
of like an alert. You blow a whistle to alert people to something
yes.
going on. By 1963, the phrase had become a hyphenated word and was used by journalists to describe people who revealed wrongdoing and eventually the hyphenation was dropped, and now we have
yeah.
whistleblower as a word.
Yeah, and, you know, the origin was disputed, so it became more commonly associated with rats or snitches or somebody who, you know,
mm-hmm.
gives evidence of wrongdoing at the workplace
mm-hmm.
after the 1960s.
Yep.
So whistleblowers, what do?
Blow a whistle.
They blow a whistle. Mm-hmm. To whom? That's your line, actually.
Oh, yeah. So, when they blow the whistle, who hears it, I guess?
Exactly.
So,
if you're
like,
standing on the
who
street,
do they tell? So,
right.
like, you're an insider, you
yeah.
see something bad going on.
Yes.
Obviously, you don't go tell the bad people who are doing the bad things. Who do you tell?
Yes. So it depends on if you're whistleblowing in the public or private sector. Mm-hmm. As you know, the government's always trying to get money back that they think people are fraudulently spending. we get these nice little emails from the state of Virginia asking us to report fraud and abuse and offering us a financial incentive to do so. So the government's always trying to do this, and they encourage whistleblowing through hotlines. There are online submission forms, and you can actually just pick up the phone and call someone.
But they really just want people to blow the whistle on the peons, the minions. They don't want anybody to blow the whistle on them.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, they're looking for you to blow the whistle on someone that you perceive to be spending money that they should not, or spending it in a way that they're not supposed to.
Yeah. So if you're spending their dollars, then somebody blow the whistle on them. But if they're doing like corrupt things, like spying on people or other illegal things, then don't blow the whistle on that.
Absolutely. So normally you report internally first, and this could be to senior officers, CEOs, or human resources. Mm-hmm. They also could just bypass that and report externally to media or the police.
Yeah.
So I just listened to the On Our Watch podcast. Had you heard of that?
Nope.
Okay, so they were reporting on the story of two former correctional officers turned whistleblowers who were talking about the violence that was used at California's New Folsom Prison. I said New Folsom Prison.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've obviously talked about
Folsom Prison.
Yeah, no, Prism, not prison. Prism, yeah. Right. Yeah. But I was thinking about this earlier. Folsom Prison, I've mentioned, is like my favorite song.
Yes.
And there's also a whistleblowing line in there.
Is there?
When I hear the whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry.
Yeah, I remember. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
There's lots of old country songs about hearing whistle.
Yes, for sure.
Hearing whistles trains. On the train, blow train songs.
Yeah. So what was happening at the New Folsom Prison is that other correctional officers were planting evidence. They were engaging in all different types of corruption and using violence against inmates. One of the correctional officers who reported this died accidentally and unexpectedly from a fentanyl overdose. Mm-hmm. So the whole podcast is actually about, his family believe that this is suspicious given what was happening.
Accidental overdose in air quotes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Accidentally from a fentanyl overdose. Mm-hmm. But he was reporting on the conduct of fellow officers. And also then a sergeant picked up his case after he died and exposed the corruption. And then that sergeant died by suicide. So the podcast is, kind of about this whole situation, what was going on in the prison, and also the whistleblowing and the effects of the whistleblowing. Mm-hmm. So the prison had dismissed the sergeant while they were investigating misconduct, but he had previously written memos to top prison officials about activities, including faked documents and planted drugs and weapons on inmates, as I said. And he was also working with lawyers on cases where he alleged evidence had been falsified or covered up. So two whistleblowers, two correctional officers, one a sergeant, both die and they're whistleblowing.
Yeah, I mean, it is a thing, not just in this case, but we'll, learn later on that whistleblowers tend to turn up dead. Is it a conspiracy? Is it a coincidence? What's going on here?
Yeah, spoiler alert for my spin. They can also report to watchdog agencies, but most try to go through internal channels first. But then they have to worry about retaliation from the agency or company that they work for.
So if you blow the whistle, are there legal protections what are your protections if you want to blow the whistle?
Yes. So first I should say that retaliation is very difficult to prove. But whistleblowers are reporting and there are some protections legally for them to do that. So the first U.S. law that was adopted specifically to protect them was the 1863 False Claims Act. And this was revised in 1986, which tried to combat fraud by suppliers during the Civil War. So the act encourages whistleblowers by promising them a percentage of the money recovered by the government and is supposed to protect them from employment retaliation.
Gotcha.
As of 2019, over 71% of all FCA actions were initiated by whistleblowers. So claims under the law have typically involved government healthcare programs like Medicare and Medicaid, military contracting, and other government spending programs. Between 1987 and 2019, the government recovered more than $62 billion under the FCA.
Yikes.
So there are lots of other laws in various areas that also protect whistleblowers, including provisions for investigating retaliation. Mm-hmm.
Nice. So despite those protection laws,
yes.
You mentioned retaliation earlier, and that's one of the reasons whistleblowers are hesitant to come forward.
Right.
I mean, I teach an ethics class, so we talk about like whistleblowing and policing, where there's like in policing, there's an added emphasis on like no snitching and
yes.
loyalty. It's even got a name, the Blue Wall of Silence.
Yes.
And Serpico.
Yes.
People may be familiar with that. It's a well-known whistleblower. There was a movie starring Al Pacino, but that was based on a real incident. And he was a police officer in New York in the 70s
right.
who, saw all kinds of corrupt things going on, bribes and kickbacks. And he, went to the media to report it. And eventually there were like congressional hearings about all this stuff. But he was like shot in the face. Accidentally on like, in air quotes.
Shot in the face.
But, that's a famous case, but police whistleblowers and other whistleblowers, yeah. they're harassed, they're threatened, they're fired, they're blacklisted.
Yes.
You mentioned like retaliation is hard to prove.
Yeah.
I was reading about a correctional officer in Nevada
mm-hmm.
this morning who was, who blew the whistle about like abuse and corruption, like horrible things
right.
going on. They were like mopping up urine and like tossing it on inmates
Ooh.
And like,
yeah.
like bad, horrible stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So he blew the whistle on that, and the sheriff fired him because there
right.
was apparently a use of force incident where he used a taser
yeah.
on an inmate.
That's
that
a
was,
common tactic.
Quote unquote,
yeah.
legitimate, but
yes.
that was used. He was fired and then, basically blacklisted. No other police department in the state of Nevada would hire him. So retaliation, people get fired for trivial things. When they don't end up dead, they end up
yeah.
retaliated. Against.
Yeah, and so that's the reason why they don't want to come forward, right?
Mm-hmm,
so
sure.
One attorney who represents whistleblowers called the tactic shooting the messenger to distract from the message.
Mm-hmm.
So what you just described is common, where a practice that was tolerated before now becomes a reason to fire you so that it doesn't look like
mm-hmm.
retaliation.
Mm-hmm.
There are actually programs that large institutions can purchase.
You mean like when
Buy.
You say program, like it's like a training manual
yes.
or like a,
yes.
like those trainings that we have to watch on like affirmative
yes.
action and hiring guidelines and
yes.
stuff.
Yes, and consultants do the program for you.
Oh my gosh.
So you purchase it
mm-hmm.
and it's designed to remove the threat that whistleblowers represent.
Mm.
All the while presenting this outward image that the institution is following the
mm-hmm.
process and they're trying their best. But you've got this disgruntled, untrustworthy, and mentally disturbed employee
yeah.
doing this. So the training is discreet and the secrecy surrounding it means that whistleblowers don't know it's happening to them.
Mm.
So they don't know these tactics are being used. And here are some examples from the programs. Undermine the credibility, mental health, and financial resources of the whistleblower.
Mm-hmm.
Isolate them from their colleagues and support structures. Dox the whistleblower. Doxing, we've talked about
mm-hmm.
before. Dox them to colleagues and future employers. Gaslighting the whistleblower so that they question what is happening and they just ultimately give up.
Mm-hmm.
Create the conditions to fuel family tensions at home.
That's like... I mean, all of these are evil, but that's particularly
evil. This is
evil.
Psychotic.
Yeah.
Like, this program is just...
And how do you,
yeah.
like, how do you do that? What were some... How would you...
I don't have examples
mm-hmm.
of that. But with everything mm-hmm. else going on, it's like some of this causes tensions
yeah.
at home, right?
I mean, if you do all of the other things, obviously someone's going to be on the edge and
there
be more
things,
likely to snap at
There
home.
Were things cited like they mm-hmm. try to get their family involved, like they harass their family. So that's probably what's fueling these tensions at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I see. You could like... Call the spouse and be like, I'm
yes.
really concerned about your husband. So
yes, yes,
gotcha.
Because step one is
mm-hmm.
having a trusted leader. The TL is the inside person in the organization
mm-hmm.
that is supposed to buddy up to the whistleblower and be their point person.
Mm.
So that's the person trying to get them to trust them as well as the family.
Mm-hmm.
So that person
and then
is
they,
a turncoat,
yeah.
obviously, and
oh.
not in the good way. So ensuring that the whistleblower appears to their former colleagues, friends, family, and any external regulators mm. to be mentally disturbed,
mm-hmm.
disgruntled, sometimes criminal, and that the institution is portraying them as this, without ever leaving evidence that the institution itself manufactured that portrayal. So making the person appear to be mentally unwell is easy to do when the whistleblower is experiencing the psychological toll of doing this, and it offers a way to discredit their evidence.
Sure.
So one of the reasons I decided to cover this now is that 4 days ago, they just ruled that John Barnett, the second Boeing whistleblower, did in fact die by suicide.
Here we go again, more quote unquote suicide, accidental deaths of whistleblowers.
Yeah, so he was found dead in a parking lot the day before he was to give his deposition in the lawsuit against Boeing about the company's disregard of airplane manufacturer safety and production standards. One of the interesting pieces of this is that he had just gone through the Taco Bell drive-thru to get food. So the joke was like, who goes to Taco Bell and then shoots themselves?
And he hadn't eaten it yet?
No.
I mean, if you had eaten it, maybe I can, that would be a little bit more like, oh gosh, this Taco Bell is making me feel like I'm about to explode.
Right.
But yeah, I hadn't eaten it yet. No, that is definitely so. I mean, we're starting to sound like conspiracy theorists.
We are. Okay.
See our episode on conspiracy theories.
Yeah, see that episode. Mm-hmm. So Barnett was a former quality manager who had worked at Boeing for decades. He told the New York Times in 2019 that he had discovered unsafe wiring clusters in Boeing's manufacturing processes that, if severed by nearby metal slivers, could have led to the catastrophic failure of an aircraft. And a lot of this came out after the MAX incidents. There were two MAX planes that crashed. So as a quality manager at Boeing, he said, you're the last line of defense before a defect makes it out to the flying public. He told the New York Times, I haven't seen a plane out of Charleston yet that I'd put my name on saying it's safe and airworthy.
Yikes.
Yeah.
I mean, if an airline doesn't care if the plane crashes and kills a bunch of people, they're not going to be concerned about a couple of whistleblowers dying.
No. So since Barnett's initial public warnings about Boeing, the company has had several high-profile safety and quality lapses, including the blowout of a door plug on a 737 MAX shortly after takeoff in January. That led the U.S. Justice Department to announce this week that Boeing actually might face criminal prosecution for its history of safety problems.
Yeah, and you mentioned like he was the second death in the Boeing whistleblower.
Yes. Joshua Dean, a former quality auditor at Boeing supplier Spirit Aerosystems, not to be confused with Spirit Airlines. It's not the same thing.
So, yeah, I read that and I thought like, oh,
yeah. Okay. So he was one of the first whistleblowers to allege Spirit leadership had ignored manufacturing defects on the 737 MAX. He died this month after a battle with a sudden fast spreading infection. So
I'm like raising my eyebrows like, what?
Yeah. So he died, but there's a third. So this newest Spirit Aerosystems whistleblower has dismissed conspiracy theories about the other two who died shortly after coming forward with their claims of safety issues. But he has admitted that he is remaining vigilant about his own safety.
Oh, so he's not dead yet.
No.
He's still the third alive. One. Yes. Third whistleblower.
Yes.
Too dead. He's still.
He's basically
alive.
Saying, I don't believe that anything bad happened, but, you know, I'm always looking behind my mirror to make sure nobody's car is following me, he said. I'm not saying that I'm scared, but at the same time, I can't put a blind eye to the reality of what could be. I have to prepare myself for that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if I was him, I would be scared.
Yes, I would be scared also.
But so, like, you know, companies can retaliate.
Yes.
Murder.
Yes, possibly.
Accidentally overdose. Yes. Suicide. Whistleblowers. But the government has also persecuted whistleblowers too.
Yes, they have. And most famously, Snowden, Edward Snowden. I mean, I guess reality winner and Chelsea Manning also. But I just chose this case because it kind of kicked this off, this discussion about surveillance and stuff. Edward Snowden was a former CIA employee who leaked classified information to the media and public about the extent of surveillance on average Americans by the NSA, which is the National Security Agency, in 2013. So he ended up, of course, having to flee to Russia because he's under indictment for espionage. But many, you know, this is related to justice also because many whistleblowers have stated that they were motivated to take action to put an end to unethical practices mm-hmm. after witnessing injustices in their businesses or organizations. That being said, you know, the ethics of what Snowden did have been widely debated because he did release classified intelligence yeah, right. and information. But he stated, and this is not really backed up because again, mm-hmm. they're trying to, shoot the messenger. Yeah. So they did this kind of like PR campaign against Snowden, calling mm-hmm. him a low level analyst, you know, not really disclosing all of the things that he was actually doing. Mm-hmm. But he did try to raise all of these ethical concerns internally. And in fact, he had thought about doing this prior to 2008, but after President Obama was elected, mm-hmm. he decided to hold off because he thought there mm-hmm. would be some reform.
Yeah.
So anyway, what he ended up doing after that, nothing mm-hmm. was done. He revealed everything to a journalist. So because it was external, he was also charged with theft of documents mm-hmm. because he took all of those mm-hmm. documents and gave them to essentially Glenn Greenwald. On September 2nd, 2020, however, a U.S. federal court ruled in United States versus Mullen that Snowden did in fact expose illegal U.S. mm-hmm. surveillance behavior. This was a big deal because mm-hmm. this is the Snowden leaks also were when like France, Germany, and other of our ally countries mm-hmm. found out that their leaders, we were surveilling their leaders. Mm. And that's when the German chancellor yeah. actually accused the United States of being the Stasi, which is the secret police of East Germany.
Yeah.
So, a lot of stuff came out in those leaks, but
yeah, for sure.
Yes. So mm-hmm. Snowden will likely never return to the U.S. because he can be yeah. indicted.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, I also wanted to mention that another reason I brought this topic today for us to talk about is because, as you know, 2 weeks ago I was in New York. Mm-hmm. Our dear friend Bessie was getting an yeah. award from Binghamton University. She is an alum, and she was the commencement speaker. Mm-hmm. And we were also at dinner with the other two award winners, and one of them was Alexander Vindman. And he is a whistleblower. He's the one mm-hmm. that was subpoenaed to testify in the Trump impeachment case. Because he was actually on the phone call mm-hmm. with Trump and Zelensky, you know, the Ukrainian yeah. president, mm-hmm. when Trump asked a foreign mm-hmm. country to mm-hmm. investigate Hunter Biden. Mm-hmm. Trump mm-hmm. actually tweeted. So he was reassigned. Him mm-hmm. and his twin brother were reassigned, mm-hmm. Which was clear retaliation yeah. for doing this. He also had to move his family because they were getting death threats. Mm-hmm. He feared for the safety after, you know, he testified in court. Yeah. And Trump even tweeted that it was retaliation.
Well, I mean, he makes no bones about saying yeah. he's going to get back at the people who yeah. criticize him.
He so. Basically yeah. said he got rid of him for insubordination mm-hmm. and a lot of other bad stuff. But
other bad stuff, yeah.
It mm-hmm. was really hard to destroy Vindman's character because mm-hmm. he was such a decorated war hero. Mm-hmm. And also he worked, like he had this high level position mm-hmm. because of all of his experience. Mm-hmm. So the reassignment ended up leading to him finally just leaving the army. Mm-hmm. But it was all due to, he says, the harassment, intimidation by the Trump administration.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I wanted to end by mentioning a few of the most famous cases of whistleblowing in the U.S. And mm-hmm. I just randomly chose a couple. Yeah. But the first one, kind of cool. Peter Buxton was the U.S. Public Health Service disease investigator who blew the whistle on the Tuskegee syphilis study. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell listeners about that study who might not know about it?
Yeah, the Tuskegee syphilis study was a clearly unethical medical study conducted by PHS. You said that's a public health service, but
yes.
when I see PHS, I always think Pound High School. That's where I went. Where I went to school.
PHS, I don't think it's called PHS anymore. Mm.
CDC, PHS and the CDC on poor African American sharecroppers from 1932 to 1972. So basically, the purpose of the study was to see what happens when syphilis goes untreated.
Yeah.
So they, infected a bunch of these guys with syphilis and didn't treat them,
yeah.
even though, you know, widespread availability of penicillin,
uh-huh.
Just like let them suffer and die to study and seeing what happened. So by its termination, 128 participants had died of syphilis or complications related to it. 40 of the participants' wife were infected and 19 children were born with congenital syphilis.
Yeah, so, I mean, to be clear, the ability to treat syphilis with penicillin mm-hmm. was available 10 years into the study. Mm-hmm. They should have ethically given everyone penicillin mm-hmm. and cured them of syphilis. So this is a famous study that we talk about in discussions mm-hmm. on research ethics. Buxton actually also first tried to register concerns about the ethics of the experiment in 1966 with mm-hmm. government officials. And the CDC, who by then controlled the study, ignored his concerns and reaffirmed the need to complete mm-hmm. it. In other words, to let all participants die and autopsy them. Mm-hmm. So in 1972, he gave them a chance to do the right thing, and then he went to the press. Mm-hmm. So a public outcry ensued that finally led to the review and termination of the study. And in 1974, the NAACP won a class action lawsuit on behalf of participants and their descendants. In the aftermath of the revelations, Congress established the Office for Human Research Protections and passed federal laws to protect the rights of human subjects and studies. And this is why we have an institutional review board. Right.
Of which you used to be the chair.
Oh, fun times. Mm-hmm. Yes, fun times. So, you know, during the pandemic, you know, when people discuss the fact that Black Americans may not mm-hmm. trust the public health system, mm-hmm. this is, or the CDC,
yeah.
this is one of the many reasons for that, right?
For sure, yeah.
Yeah. So there are a few others that there have been movies about. You mentioned Serpico, for example. Mm-hmm. The Insider is about Jeffrey Wigand, who exposed the tobacco industry in 1996, and Russell Crowe played him in the movie.
Okay.
Yeah, so the tobacco industry was knowingly using additives that were carcinogenic mm-hmm. to increase the nicotine effects of cigarettes. Mm. Karen Silkwood, played by Meryl Streep, where she was nominated for an Oscar mm-hmm. in that role, worked as a chemical technician at the Kerr-McGee nuclear plant in Oklahoma. And as part of her union duties, she discovered numerous safety issues, including workers being exposed to contamination, faulty respiratory equipment, and a bunch of others. So she testified to the United States Atomic Energy Commission in the summer of 1974 about these concerns. We've mentioned this mm-hmm. before in the nuclear disasters episode, the Atomic Energy Commission.
Mm-hmm.
So in November of that year, she died in a car accident under suspicious circumstances.
Another one bites the dust.
Yeah. So officials ruled the death an accident, but paint on the back bumper of her new car and missing documents regarding plant safety caused people to say, hey, she might have intentionally been run off the road.
Yeah.
She was also on her way to an interview with the New York Times reporter regarding the plutonium mm-hmm. contamination.
Did she have any uneaten Taco Bell in her car?
I don't even know if that Taco Bell thing is true. I just read it. In 1975, the plant closed, mm-hmm. and in 1979, her father and children successfully sued on behalf of her estate.
Yeah.
There are tons more, but we cannot discuss them all, or we will not be under 30 minutes in this podcast.
Yeah, right. So I guess that means it's time to wrap it up with our Minute to Spin It, where we both give our takeaway from the show today. So,
yes.
Tommy, what's your spin in just a minute?
So my friend posted this meme, and I don't know who the actors are or what show it's from, but mm-hmm. it does sum up this episode nicely. Mm-hmm. And the captions read, question, is two a lot? Response, it depends on the context. Dead whistleblowers? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Planes falling out of the sky? Also yes.
Yeah, two dead whistleblowers is a lot. Two planes crashing. Yeah.
I mean, two mm-hmm. plus two, right? Because we've got mm-hmm. two dead correctional officers and mm-hmm. two dead Boeing whistleblowers.
Mm-hmm.
So in this context, two is a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ben, what's your spin?
Well, I need to wet my whistle.
Okay.
Actually, before I put on my... little bit more, just okay. a little bit more wet.
There's gonna be so many. Zach's gonna listen to this and he's gonna be like, why all these whistles?
Okay. Mm-hmm. You just put your lips together and you start to blow, and you blow my whistle, baby. Whistle, baby. Here we go. I can't do that whistle word anymore. Even after I wetted my whistle, I still can't do that whistle anymore. But anyway, whistle blowing is important and vital. Sometimes for life and death situations like Boeing planes falling out of the sky. And it's important that we have protections for whistleblowers and consequences for those who retaliate against whistleblowers.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries. Please see our show notes to find out how you can support our educational programming.